Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
Hey, welcome to the Casual Comics Cast, everybody. I'm Joe, your Casual Comics guy. Today with me, I got my good buddy Mark. Mark, how you doing?
Greetings, Joe. How are you, sir?
I'm not fantastic. I'm not amazing. I'm not incredible. I'm just a little credible. Not incredible. How about
and
you?
I'm just tacular. Not spectacular, just tacular.
Tacular. I like it. So we got a little bit of a fun podcast today, I think. We were just at your house doing a fantasy football draft, Mark. It's that time of year. Summer is winding to a close. Hopefully we'll be recording podcasts a little more frequently now that my kids are back in school. I'll have a little bit more free time.
Burgers, brats. Bijan Robinson. Bears beats Battlestar Galactica. Okay. Sorry. Go. I just had to get that out there.
That's all right. That's fun. So we thought we'd do a fantasy draft of Avengers, and we've got a fun scenario cooked up for that. But first, just catch up on some comic news, man. It's been a while since we talked about it. And we've had a trailer for Loki season 2.
We have. Probably up there with WandaVision tied for my favorite Disney Plus Marvel shows. I mean, they have some good ones out there. But love the season 1. And I just love the Mobius-Loki relationship. It's awesome. And they're really leaning into it, I think, in season 2. Right, Joe? So I'm looking forward to it. How about you?
It's fun. That's a really fun relationship. You're right, with Mobius and Loki. I think a lot of people talk about Loki-Sylvie romance, but I think the bromance a little bit.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, with Victor Timely making an appearance.
Yes, in the trailer. So it'll be interesting to see what they're doing, because it's almost like everything's really quieted down around Marvel with Kang and with that whole quantum universe,
right.
Multiverse. But this is the next get you going, get you ready for the Marvels, which is the next movie coming out, right?
I think so. I think that's the next one, November. Yeah.
Yeah. So Loki will premiere in October. I'm with you. Loki was one of my favorites. I might slot Moon Knight just a hair ahead of it.
Yeah. You like that very, I liked it. I didn't like it as much as you, but yeah, I could see that. No argument for me.
I think Moon Knight's going to be one of those that every like October, when it gets to be spooky season, turn Moon Knight back on and Werewolf by Night.
I forgot about that one, Joe. I mean, you told me to watch it. I wasn't into it, and I watched it. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
So fun. So we've got a lot coming up. The only other piece of comic book news that I saw as I was going around is, you know, Love is in the Air in Marvel. There's a big wedding coming up.
Emma Frost and Tony Stark, right?
Weird. I saw like the cover preview.
Yeah. So, what's Tony that and about? Emma.
Where is
the odd pairing?
Where is that coming from?
I have no idea. I mean, I guess I could see it personality wise. But yeah, we'll see. Because it's Tony Stark's Iron Man, right? It's not somebody else. It's actually Tony Stark and Emma Frost, right?
Right. Tony Stark.
Okay.
And like Emma Frost, who was a bad guy for a long time in X-Men comics, now longstanding member of the X-Men, and like has, I don't know whether she was actually married or was almost married to Cyclops.
Like, they were dating. I thought they were married, but you're right. Maybe they were just dating. It's hard to keep track anymore of the Marvel soap opera.
And that's what I used to tell people. I'm like, it's kind of like a soap opera for guys. It's like, who's dating
it who is.
And who's fighting who? Who's a good guy? Who's a bad guy?
Under the guise of beautiful art.
There's actually a Spider-Man comic thought. I only got halfway through it. Like the latest issue of Spider-Man is like triple size. It's huge. And it's a wedding issue that is like not the Kingpin. Who's the other guy? One of the other crime bosses and his daughter's getting married.
Million or the Rose?
No, the Rose is involved though. But the crime families are supposed to be coming to the wedding, and they're all scared because Kingpin's son got put in jail, and I think Kingpin's going to come back and try and wipe people out. But there's a little romance there too, and Peter Parker, it's Ben Reilly's son, and Peter Parker's the best man. So
okay, all right.
There's some.
Yeah, we'll have to do a future write up of the, or a review of the Emma Frost Tony Stark one, Joe.
I can see it. We'll see when it comes down the pike. But we got a couple comic reviews as well. Some new comics out. You know, Sins of Sinister, which is the new big X-Men event, which then after reading it, I'm puzzled about how Emma Frost will marry Tony Stark.
Right.
And then the latest Fantastic Four, which is really fun, written by Ryan North. Do you care which do you have a preference for what we cover them in?
No, I don't. Whatever you want. I think we should do Sins of Sinister first because I don't know if it was a Monday thing, but I had the most it was entertaining, but the most confusing to me. So maybe you can help walk me through some of it, like what was going on.
Okay, so let's start with Sins of Sinister, and then we'll cover Fantastic Four, and then we'll do our Avengers fantasy draft to wrap up the show. So we will be right back with Sins of Sinister.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. We're not done until one of us can't get up. This is a wake-up call. We must be better in the future. We cannot act like we have. A useful monster is still a monster. Sinister is gone. Let us make a better, kinder Krakoa.
Sins of Sinister.
A kinder, gentler Krakoa.
And I think you're right. This is probably one that we'll have to puzzle over because X-Men mythology is just so thick right now.
Yes. And
I think the last X-Men book we read was just sort of kicking off this whole idea where they've all moved to Krakoa and they can be resurrected. All of the mutants have the ability to be resurrected, and they've made a kind of peace treaty with humans where they're giving humans medicine in order to just be kind of left alone and be able to be a sovereign nation. And years later now, go figure, putting Mr. Sinister on the council ruling Krakoa, not a great idea.
Not even a Monday morning quarterback type thing, right, Joe? It's like, maybe you shouldn't have Mr. Sinister on your council.
It's right in his name.
It's like literally.
It's not like Magneto.
He's not a redeemed villain, but I guess they wanted him on the council.
I didn't know much about Mr. Sinister. I think he was big in the 90s X-Men cartoon. I know a lot of people have really good like memories who were growing up in that era. But I think Mr. Sinister was a little after me. But he's a genetic scientist. And the way that the mutants of Krakoa have come to this sort of immortality is there's like this part of this mutant group that they create these eggs and they can clone DNA and they can create complete clones of everybody. And then there's a psychic database that is keeping your brain patterns updated. I think it's one of those where it's like, how long do you wait between updates? Like you get to save as, but they hold them. And then if the mutant dies, they release this clone and then put the saved memories into the clone's head and boom, you're back. You're functionally immortal. Yes. That's what's been going on with the X-Men. And one of the keys to that was Mr. Sinister and his genetic expertise figuring out this cloning process. And he's planted a bug in there intentionally.
Yes. So they all, in the source code, if you will, to your point, he plants basically a Mr. Sinister gene where they can all be versions of him in some capacity, even though they get reincarnated as their mutant resurrected people. They're still, I don't know if they're not really under his control, right? They're just, they're like a variant of a Mr. Sinister. Is that how you read it?
Yeah. He's implanted a slice of his own DNA into it, and he has limited control over them. He can get them to do things. He has influence over them, and they talk about it later in the comic because they're offering this to humans, and he can fine tune how much he's controlling them versus how, he calls it, how long of a leash they're on. Yeah. And so he's allowed mutants that he's with to retain most of their personality, but he still holds quite a bit of sway over them and can direct them more than he would be able to had he not implanted this in their genes.
Yes. And that part of it was pretty deep for me. So I just kind of pulled myself out of it and said, I just love any storyline with mutants and humans, because that, like we said on previous podcasts, that whole like deep rooted, you know, prejudice is very interesting to read, you know, in terms of parallels to real life and how you can talk about what might be good, but it's just about, it doesn't matter who you are. It's like, you're either doing good things or bad things. It doesn't matter if you're a mutant or a human. And that's the thread that I always liked growing up when I read the mutant comics. It's just, there's bad mutants and there's good mutants, and there's bad humans and there's good humans. And so they talk about that in terms of, they want to give the humans this medicine, and it's one bad mutant that ruins it.
Right. And there's this push and pull where one group will have an upper hand, and it's almost like because of the things they do to get that upper hand, it creates animosity in the other group. And so Where we are in Marvel Comics is kind of where you kind of knew you would be at some point when the mutants created their own nation, and they're like, oh, we have something humans don't. We are now immortal. We have sovereignty. You are going to be less than us. And it goes beyond, and they get this weird balance. But again, it's like when the mutants created Krakoa in this ideal society, they gave amnesty to all mutants. Like, it doesn't matter what you did in your past. We all are getting a fresh start. And so like Juggernaut, Mr. Sinister, everybody, you're starting with a fresh slate. And on their council, I think there's 16 on the council, 4 seats are reserved. Like, basically these reformed, quote unquote, bad guys who, as you see now, aren't reformed. And he is doing crappy stuff to humans that is going to provoke a response.
Yes, yes. And it is, like you said, it's, you know, old storylines, it'd be the humans would develop basically a gene that would remove mutant from a person. And so, and that was actually a story thread in the movie, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just, this is kind of the reverse of that. Like you said, now the mutants have something that the humans, most humans want. And people are always like, there's always a catch if it's free.
Right.
They just want to give it away. And that's what happens here.
Yeah. And they never get to, it's almost like the theme of X-Men comics is there's always fated to never be like, quote, the balance in the force. Like, they can't peacefully coexist for some reason, because they're going to always try and get they're both fear each other, and they fear each other equally. Like, the mutants fear the humans as much as the humans fear the mutants. And therefore this fear can never be overcome, and they're always trying to wipe each other out.
Yes. And it's because, like you said, there's no foundation of trust. There's no trust there. There's occasional respect, but you've got to have trust for the relationship to work, just like in anything. And they don't, they have fear. Right. They fear each other. And there's always going to be, when you talk about mass of people, there's always going to be people like in the comic, like Ben Reilly, trying to find the truth of like, there's something going on here that we shouldn't trust. And so I like that little one off with, I'm like, any comic that has J. Jonah Jameson as a cameo is awesome, by the way. So I was just like, what? What's he doing in there?
Especially when he's been sinisterized.
That's right. That's right. And then seeing, you know, Juggernaut's going through Thanos's brain. Like, there's some really good art in there. I just sat staring at the comic in the Marvel Unlimited app, Joe, like with the Namor killing Dr. Doom, and just, there's some beautiful art in here, because it's like, I want a visual of Namor, you know, impaling Dr. Doom. And it's like, these are things you'll never see in any other comic, but here you can kind of get away with it based on the storyline.
And you can get away with it because part of the key to his plot is this Moira engine that he's built, which, you know, I know not too much about Moira McTaggart, but she lives a whole lifetime and then can come back with all of her memories of that lifetime. So he's built a Moira engine where he can burn through Moira's, mm-hmm. and she keeps coming back and telling him that this worked this way. And every time there's a fatal flaw, so he can correct it in the present before they get there, which is
right.
really weird to me. And the writer of X-Men, I think it's Jonathan Hickman writing it now. Mm-hmm. This guy is like so cerebral that it's not just like I'm going to sit down and have a quick casual comics read.
Yeah.
It gets thick. I almost feel like you need like a Game of Thrones style, like math of who's who. They pull in characters. I don't know. Do you know Hope Summers very well? I kind of know Hope Summers.
I kind of know it, but no.
She's the one who I think after Scarlet Witch had wiped out all the mutants, so no more mutants, she was the first mutant born like after that. And she's Scott Summers' daughter, right?
Right.
It's God, that guy. Between him and Jane and all the timelines of how many different Summers versions there are. And then Cable is like his son from that guy.
Right.
But then I don't know a lot about her powers. And so a lot of the X-Men that I know a lot about aren't really major players right now, because it's this whole political dynamic with side characters. Forge shows up.
Yeah. Yep. And,
so
I with you, it was not a quick service restaurant. It was a going to the steakhouse, eating a, porterhouse. It's a meal. But it's still fun to read if you want to just breeze through it. But I feel like I have to go back and reread it to understand the story, like you said.
Right. I do big time. Because he's also got little fun asides, which was the one whole page, which is The Incredible Genius of Mr. Sinister, Part 4 Billion. The abstract with like the 7 bullet points. He does stuff like that. And I'm always in awe when I read Hickman's X-Men, but I always feel like I'm not smart enough to keep up or I'm not investing enough time in it. So...
Yep.
Overall, Mark, you think there was a reading guide at the end, and it looks like Sins of Sinister number one is the only title that's going to carry that ledger. And the rest of them are just individual issues of X-Men to show you sort of like how this is playing through different X-Men timelines. One of them 10 years in the future, one like 1,000 years in the future, and one like 10,000 years in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of like that. It makes you can read any one of them. And if you know the base material, you can go out and explore. So very cerebral, like you said.
So that's sort of my question when we wrap these up is, are you thinking you will go back and continue reading and explore? Or are you kind of like going to surf it and be like, I'm glad I knew about it, but not my gig?
I think it's more for me the latter. I'm more at the stage of my comic book reading career. I just want to be entertained and move on. So I probably will shelve it. And maybe at some point it'll be like a splinter in my brain going off to be like, I gotta read it again, and all these offshoots that could happen too.
Yeah, I agree. That's kind of how I am with X-Men now, is like I like to dip into it and maybe I'll read like 4 or 5 issues and then I'm like, this gets too hard. And because there's so many X-Men titles, it is a big time investment. But when something big like this pops up, I like to check in on it and say, oh, that's a pretty clever concept. I'll read about it later of the summary.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Well, we'll take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about the new Fantastic Four title.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. Sweet beef. Now it's a party.
What was that from?
That was from one of the cartoons, I think, of the late 80s, early 90s of Fantastic Four. I love it.
Brilliant. I love it.
Fantastic Four, because Fantastic Four to me has always been meant to like be a fun thing.
Yes.
And this new series, Ryan North, I think it's Ryan North. I'm going to feel bad because the name's on the last page and I'm on the first page of the comic. He picked it up, and I didn't know anything about him. But I heard a lot of people who were very excited that he was going to be on the book. And so they're on issue 7 now. Or actually, they're on issue 10 now. The Marvel Unlimited app has the first 7. And we picked up issues 1 and 2 to go through. Mm-hmm. And so I read them multiple times. And I actually kind of love this series. I want to get your impression, though. Reading issue number 1, what do you like what stuck out to you? And give me your recap and your thoughts.
Well, so I read them both, as you know. You said it to me, and you said you liked them. I really enjoyed them also. And I guess it's not a but. I guess what I'm wanting to understand, are they like, who's their target audience? That's what I couldn't like. It's got to be people that already know who the Fantastic Four is.
Well, I think when you get to the end, and I'm going to try and flip to it here quickly while we're talking, the writer actually talks about his thoughts on the Fantastic fan page. And like, he started out with this like little guide that he sent to the editor, and he said, here's what I'm trying to keep in mind. Number one, the Fantastic Four are fun. These are people who know they can help people and are here to do that. No angst, having superpowers rules. Number two, the Fantastic Four are adventurers. Exploring the unexplored is fun and gratifying. The known, unknown, and the impossible are crazy interesting. Three, the Fantastic Four can do anything. If we want to recapture the feeling of the FF as they were in the 60s, where anything could happen, we have to let what's come before be there to inspire stories, but not limit them. And four, the Fantastic Four are accessible. This is a comic for people who've read every Fantastic Four appearance since 1961, but also one that welcomes people who have never read a single Fantastic Four comic before, or even a single Marvel comic. So
I think that I agree with all that, except for that very last sentence. I think it would be a little confusing after reading the first two books, mm-hmm. for a new to comic person. But if you know anything about the Fantastic Four, which I think is a pretty broad audience, if you're going to buy the comic, I'm just saying, like, I kept reading it saying, well, I would kind of feel bad for somebody that doesn't know anything about the Fantastic Four and read these. Yeah.
Okay.
That's all. But I loved it.
I thought it was kind of clever. So the issue 1 kicks off with what I thought was an error in printing, because I had the printed comic.
I did the same thing. I went back. I was like, what?
I was like, they just repeated the same page. And this issue only has one of the members of the Fantastic Four. So I can see where they're like trying to lay groundwork and lay hooks like a TV show might. I'm going to introduce you to what they're doing is they're, I'm going to introduce you to one character at a time.
Yeah.
Not give you the Fantastic Four story. And so this one centers on Thing. And yeah, I can see what you're talking about. It's like, if you don't know who Thing is, you'd be like, why is this giant orange rock monster guy with a blind woman trying to stay the night at a hotel? Like, it's, they're married. They're a married couple. They stumble across this town that keeps repeating in a time loop, mm-hmm. from the 1940s.
And Joe, that part is okay. I guess the part is like, the what I really liked about the comic, I'm saying you're not going to grasp, like, why does, if you don't know anything about him, you'd be like, why does he get so sad when people call him a monster?
Right.
Like, doesn't he know he's an orange rocky guy? It's like, well, he turned into that. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't know that. And if that's all I'm saying, everything else I loved, I'm just like, but then that part of the comic, which was very emotional and in a good way in the mm-hmm. in the first comic about introducing Thing, you just wouldn't have that understanding if you didn't know anything about the Thing. That's my only knock on it. It's a very small knock.
Yeah, I think you're right when I think about that. You know, you wouldn't have the emotional hook, and you wouldn't get like you said, why he's upset that people think he's a monster. But I mean, it's actually a pretty lighthearted story. I think the other three pieces he hits is it's fun. You know, they're adventurers. Yep. They wander into this unknown circumstance. They're like, we're here. I guess we better help, right? We kind of don't know what's going on. We don't know if it's whatever. We're here. We're going to help this town that's stuck in a loop that ends every day. Which, by the way, people are like shooting at him, trying to run him over with cars.
Yeah, and I like how they try different ways to help when they find out the source of the time loop. I just felt like I could have used a little bit of Jim Shooter type vibes of like explaining what's going on. But again, as a if you know the Fantastic Four at all, it is really good. So you're right. It's really well done.
It would be that Jim Shooter scene where he's like, my name's Ben Grimm, a.k.a. The Thing. You might remember me from such cosmic radiation accidents as when.
Right. A little bit of that would go a long way, I think.
Well, because they make a couple references to, like, you know, I didn't realize Alicia had, you know, so much of a backstory. And it's okay that, you know, I think you don't have. So I'm with you. It helps to know who the Fantastic Four are and the basic premise. But
yeah,
it's like you don't have to have any continuity because they're kind of recalibrating the continuity in this comic.
Right.
And I'm with you. It's so fun the way he writes it. Like they keep showing, like, it looks like it's bleeding off the top and bottom of the page sometimes. Like them trying to get the town out of the loop and then trying to get this guy out of the loop. I don't know.
And yeah, because I mean, I agree. And I remember there's a little run there where I actually bought the thing comic books. There was a run because I just was, you know, like, hey, I kind of like that whole backstory with Alicia and him. He's in the Secret Wars way back in the day out with her, you know, and the Yancey Street Gang, like all these things. He did a masterful job of encapsulating, like you said, in that outline, the Thing and his relationship and what he does, the Clobbering Time stuff. I mean, it was great. It was great.
No one respects Clobbering Time anymore. That's right. I'll tell you what, if he works in references in the future of when Thing was a professional wrestler, I will be all over it because that was my favorite era of the Thing.
That's right. Yes.
So issue one, though, it kind of ends with the question which I had in the back of my head is, like, for issue number one of a brand new Fantastic Four series, why is it just the Thing? Where is everybody else?
Mm-hmm.
And it ends on, it's such a, to me, a sweet comic, lighthearted. And then it ends with, you know, him saying, am I stuck with this Fantastic Four? You know, we're people that are going to be together forever. And he's like, I wonder, you know, after what Reed did to New York, and you see this whole smoking crater in the ground, which I don't know if it's spoiler or not, it's like where the Baxter Building and everything used to be. Just basically downtown New York is a crater. And he's like, the rest of the world won't be forgiving the Fantastic Four. Dun, dun, dun. The end. What do you think of that cliffhanger there?
Right. Well, I liked it. I mean, I was a little sad because I think the crater was where you and I had dinner that one night in New York. I was like, that's not there anymore.
You can't get that gluten-free cheesecake anymore.
That was the best place ever. Friedman's or something. Everything was gluten-free.
You're going to give him a shout out? Free plug on the air?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the name of the place. I want to do that, but yeah.
All right.
It was awesome. I'll look it up later.
Then issue number two centers around two other members of the Fantastic Four, Reed and Sue. And it's a nice framing device, which is the whole thing is sort of narrated by Sue writing a letter to She-Hulk. And again, I kind of like the way he humanizes people. He's like, you know, it was great when we used to just hang out on the couch, just Jen and Sue, not She-Hulk and Invisible Woman. And you get to see them as people. And like, this comic, to me, right away, I'll let you, what stood out to you in this comic? Because I'll tell you what caught me and stood out to me, like, in the first three pages.
Well, the first three pages. Well, I would say what stuck out to me throughout the comic was, again, what I loved about the first one is you don't need to have an in-depth understanding of Sue and Reed's relationship. It all gets, he does a amazing job of putting it all in one comic, mm-hmm. of what she loves about him, what she thinks is endearing about him, what she can't stand about him, and they bring it out through that whole story in just this one comic, and that's pretty amazing to do. It's like every relationship flaw and idiosyncrasy they have with each other, it's in this comic. That's what I really loved about it.
Yeah, it struck me right away that I'm like, I think this is the first comic I've read in a long, long time where I'm like, oh, I understand why they're together. I understand that they really genuinely like each other.
Yes.
How long has it been since I read a Fantastic Four comic book where Sue wasn't all mad at Reed for not paying attention to the Thing and people were calling him a computer with no emotions in a bad way and stuff like that? And
yes, like, he's making horribly wrong decisions and she hated him for it. It's like, yes.
And that thread kind of carries through this comic, which is, Like, yeah, you remember from the last issue that something bad happened in New York and it was Reed's fault, but he's not a bad dude, and she completely understands why, and it's like there's still something there, and it's not him being just, like I said, normally it's like him and Tony Stark are like, we're going to build a prison for superheroes in the negative zone. Ha ha. No thought of the consequences at all.
These are tough decisions, Sue. I didn't involve you at all.
Right. So this one's a little different story, but it's also a little bit of a sentimental story.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course they got I'm like, what are they going to bring in? The arch nemesis, Victor Von Doom. And right out of the gate, there's Doombots.
Doombots.
Doombots attacking him.
It's another small town story too, which is,
yes,
they've stumbled in. Whatever's happened to New York, they're obviously not well thought of. They got the Fantastic Car running on gas now, apparently.
I'm like, what's going on with that?
I don't know if Reed's super Tesla charging station that was in the Baxter building is no longer available. He had to fit the engine for gas. And they go to this small town. And yeah, they get attacked by Doombots. The Doombots are acting weird, which is, they just act like normal people, except when they see Reed Richards and Sue, because their directive is kill Reed Richards.
Right. But you discover later it's actually their second directive.
Right.
Their primary directive is to help this woman that apparently helped a young Victor Von Doom back in the day.
Right. So they go to investigate, trying not to get killed by the Doombots. Sue goes invisible. Reed mushes his face into different shapes so he won't be recognized.
By the way, I think you told me this. This comic alone, if you have any interest in Reed Richards, it's the most creative use of his powers in one comic that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And the eyeball thing, and then the shovels, and then face morphing. Like, Joe, that was amazing. I'm like, yeah, he should be able to do all that stuff.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah.
It's been so long since I even cared about Reed Richards as a character.
Right.
This kind of got me really back into it, especially like you said, and it gets back into his past with Doom. And it's the first time ever, because this woman was kind to Victor Von Doom when he was a struggling student. She'd feed him, house him, just, you know, generally let him, you know, take care of him when he was a college student. And he's like, I promise I'm going to take care of you too. And they're like, well, Victor always lives up to his debts. You can say that about him. And so he's talking to this sweet old lady, and she tells him the story, and he's like, I guess the timeline matches up. And I thought, to me, the most fun line here is where this lady who's got fond memories of Doom from, you know, taking care of him. And she's like, my husband and I could never have kids. And I took him under and she asks him, she's like, oh, so, you know, how is Victor? And he pauses and he goes, he's remarkably effective in his chosen line of work.
Right. It was not a lie. That was great. A very honest answer.
Yeah, he's not going to burst her bubble either and tell her. Although it seems odd to me that this woman could not know that Victor Von Doom was a despot ruling in Latveria. But you find out why.
Just a coincidence. His name's Dr. Doom.
Yeah. But there actually is a reason when you get to the resolution of the comic, which is I also found a little bit moving. And it ends with Sue actually giving a nod to the fact that because Reed does act without emotion, he can find solutions other people can't, which in this case is rescuing the Doombots instead of destroying them.
Right. Because he also is a good person. Even though he might not show emotion, it doesn't mean he's a bad person. And he rewires them and honors it and wants the whole town, that he just removes the kill, you know, Fantastic Four directive. But the original directive is very heartwarming. He wants to create a reality for this woman to honor his old friends agreement.
Right.
Till the end of their days. So it was very heartwarming.
I like it. So I'll ask the same question. Is this one that you'll stick with for a while?
I think so. Yeah. I think because I want to, I'm invested in how is he going to introduce Storm, which is in the next one, Johnny Storm. And then how are they going to introduce like the origin story? It's going to be really interesting to me.
I don't want to spoil it for you, but if you're going to read the next issue, prepare to see Johnny Storm with a sweet mustache.
Can't wait.
I was delighted by the way this artist put a sweet mustache.
Oh my gosh. You're going to make me pull it up right now.
You're going to look at it while we're closing up this segment.
Yeah.
Cause that is a sweet stash that he's got going on. And, you know, you will find out eventually, like what happened in New York. It's maybe not what people expect. And I've stuck with it. I'm picking up the paper copies and it's on about issue 10 right now. And it's still just as good. They're bringing in mysteries there, and you don't have to be like a huge deep into Fantastic Four to just be delighted by this comic. Did you find the picture of him?
Is that him? Jonathan Fairweather? Is that it?
Yeah. He's going incognito. He's got a fake name and a big mustache.
He does. He's got like the Sam Elliott like tombstone look.
Right.
I love it.
Jonathan Fairweather.
Kicking butt at his secret identity. That's so great.
I love it. All right. Well, that wraps up our discussion of Fantastic Four. When we come back, there'll be a little intro to our Fantasy Avengers draft to set the scene. But ultimately, you will have to assemble an Avengers team to solve.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. We could do this all day.
It's a brisk fall morning, and Sam Wilson is on his morning jog, clearing his head. The events of the last several days have left him mentally exhausted, but also invigorated. He picks up speed, nearly sprinting now. His heart starting to pick up speed, his lungs starting to feel the burn.
On your left,
he hears. The words barely register, instincts kicking in to guide him slightly rightward as a blue-gray blur flies past.
After all these years, Steve Rogers, the world's most humble show-off,
he thinks, a grin creeping across his face. But in an instant, something's off. He sees Steve go from full run to full stop, sliding to a stop on the slick pavement and raising a hand to his ear. Even though it's only seconds later, Steve is hundreds of yards down the path. Sam slows to a walk, catching his breath and eyeing Steve. The captain's rigid posture gives it away. He's on a call with S.H.I.E.L.D. As he reaches his best friend, Steve clicks the call off and turns to face Sam.
What's up, Cap?
Steve's stoic face betrays the urgency of the situation. His one tell. The more serious the issue, the more professional his demeanor.
We've got a two-pronged issue, Sam. First, Stark Tech has detected an incursion into a lab so secret that Tony never even told S.H.I.E.L.D. about its existence. Intel says it's AIM, and they already have control of the lab. They're about an hour from accessing something Tony has called Codename Furious 5, so you can see why Nick is concerned. With Tony off-planet someplace at Korg's bachelor party, he's not responding to any attempts to reach him. At the same time, Nick's got eyes on Ultron. He's got drones up on the moon, and they look to be constructing something. Not sure what, but it's about the size of a football stadium. The two may be related. Intel says that while MODOK may be on site at Stark Tech, it's probably only drones up on the moon. We need to investigate and take out both threats ASAP.
Sam takes all this information in and processes it quickly, tactics and calculations spinning through his head. Sam looks at him, another smile starting to cross his lips.
So, Cap, you gonna say it?
Steve nods and touches his earpiece.
Avengers, assemble.
Ooh, Mark, it's time to assemble your dream Avengers squad. So a couple of things. Yep. Iron Man off planet at Korg's bachelor party, unavailable, can't be reached. And we both have Captain America and Sam available to us as wild cards without spending a pick.
Yes, I love it. So are we... Is it a snake draft? What's going on here? Auction?
We'll just go back and forth. We don't need to do a snake. We can just go pick for pick, and we'll go back and forth, and we'll see who assembles the mightiest team of Avengers to solve the dual threats that they're facing in the moment. Are you ready Because if you're ready, Mark, you are on the clock.
All right. Okay, look at that.
First pick.
All right. First pick. And I've got a second wild card group team that I'll go through real quickly after this, Joe.
Okay.
But my first pick, I'm going with Wasp.
All right. Yes.
I like the leadership qualities. I like the fact that she can shrink down into situations. And I like, in lieu of Captain America, I like her being kind of the leader of this team. So I'm taking the Wasp, Janet Van Dyne.
Janet Van Dyne, first pick overall from Monmouth College. I don't know if that's true or not.
Could be. I don't know.
All right. Now it's time for the second pick in the draft. The pick is in, Mark. You've addressed your leadership. I think I need to address the leadership on my team, except I need somebody on the moon ASAP. It's Carol Danvers, Ms. Marvel.
Yes, I love it.
Captain Marvel now. I need somebody who can breathe in outer space and lead a team there. So she's my first overall pick.
I like it.
Are you ready for your pick?
Yes. All right, my second pick is Vision.
Vision. What?
Same reason as you. You need somebody that can go outer space and go do stuff. And absolutely, Vision is my synthesoid that is going to do that.
No special breathing apparatus required.
Correct.
And also related to Ultron. Right? The comic Vision. Yep. Was created by Ultron and has the brain patterns.
Yes.
Of Wonder Man.
A little inside information there. Yes, exactly. I need an in with my team, and that's the Vision.
Right, because you don't know. Ultron could be involved. You don't know.
Could be. You don't know.
Information not available. So with the next pick in the draft, I also need someone on the ground. And it's going to be, this might be a surprise pick, Mark, Hawkeye.
Ooh, I like it.
Any good Avengers team needs Hawkeye. He's a sniper. He can sword fight. He can get in there, rough it up. And if it's AIM, he also has some espionage skills to go with it.
I like it. I have much, very good pick.
All right, you're up.
All right, with the third pick, I need somebody to do the brute force Krieger tank mode brute force work, and it's the Incredible Hulk. I need the Hulk to go Hulk do this smash. Dirty work. Yes.
Okay. You got Hulk. You got power. You got strength. Third round. Where do I want to go next on my big board? My pick, I'm going to take the counterpart to the Wasp, taking Hank Pym, Ant-Man.
Yeah, I like it.
Send
he
him
was
him
on
in.
My list. You vultured my pick. You took him from me.
You were trying
he
to take Wasp and Ant-Man?
Yeah, I wanted the duo.
Sniped it. I sniped
you
it.
Did. You sniped it.
All right, are we in the fourth round now?
Yep. All right, I'm going to take, because you sniped mine, I'm going to take the duo of Vision, and I'm taking Scarlet Witch.
Ooh, Scarlet Witch.
I want that duo together, Vision and Scarlet Witch on my team.
You got the most powerful mutant in all of existence.
Yes, and a former Avenger, I might add.
And a former Avenger. I forgot until I looked at that list, you know, because I don't know why. I just, I spaced because I read so many comics where Vision was in the Avengers that, like, I was like, oh yeah, he was actually created by Ultron to infiltrate the Avengers and kill them.
Yeah.
That was like his origin. And they were like, you didn't kill us. Fine. You're an Avenger now.
They like redemption stories. Who doesn't?
So you got the WandaVision matchup.
I did. All that right. And that was a nod to you, by the way, Joe.
I appreciate it. With already in the fourth round?
Yeah, this is your fourth round pick, yes.
My fourth round pick. I'm going to go I'm going to go overseas to the little known Wakanda U and pick up Black Panther.
I like it.
I can use some of that Wakanda tech on the moon mission as well. And somebody who's got some brains to figure out what's going on up there.
That's good. I like it.
All right. Like round, it a lot. Round five, Mark. Here we go.
All right. In round five, I'm going with Black Knight.
Oh, Black Knight. I thought about Black Knight.
He's one of my favorite 80s, early 90s Avengers. I don't know why I picked him other than just I like him. It's one of those picks you just get infatuated with a player in fantasy football, Joe. You can't help it. You got to pick up. That's my pick for Black Knight.
Dude, we're thinking exactly alike in the fifth round. Because fifth round and sixth round is time for sleepers.
That's right.
To round out my moon team, I am going the Prince of Space, Hercules himself.
I like it.
Hercules, dude.
Hercules.
I needed some muscle, too. And once Hulk was off the board, it was either Thor or Hercules. And I think Hercules is just fun. Hercules, yes. Those comics in the 80s were a crack up, dude, because he's like a party monster. But he's also incredibly powerful. And yes. I love the thought of him up there with Captain Marvel.
I love it. That'd be a good right. duo.
With the last pick, the last round coming up, Mark. Here you go.
All right, with my last pick, I'm switching it up a bit, Joe. I'm going to go with the guy that will do all the work that nobody wants to do. Ooh. It's the Merc with the Mouth, Deadpool.
Ooh, Deadpool.
He is my X-Factor, X-Force, former Avenger. You send him in to do all the work that nobody else wants to do, or even you don't want him to do anyway, but he has to do.
Did you ever watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
You know, I've watched some episodes, but not a lot.
There's an episode where they're like trying to do something, and they're like, wait, I'm the brains, you're the brawn. No, I'm the brain. Why are you the brains? I'm the brain. And the one guy in the back is like, he's like, what am I? They're like, you're the wild card, baby. That's what you're gonna do. He's like, wild card.
Yes, that's what he is. He's my wild card. Last pick of the draft.
Nice. So with the final pick in the draft, Mr. or Ms. Irrelevant, we will see. But if I'm going to have an Avengers team that's going to be trying to go after S.H.I.E.L.D., the reason I took Hawkeye so early, I got to have some sexual tension there. I'm taking Mockingbird.
Oh, yes. I love it. Mockingbird. She was on my list. You gotta get Mocking. You see, we both did duos. You got Hawkeye, Mockingbird. I got Scarlet Witch, Vision. I like it. We think alike.
The sad thing is when I pulled my draft board together, I was trying to do alternates of what if I don't get that. I knew as long as I got Hawkeye, I had three lady friends he could have.
Womanizer.
Hawkeye and Daredevil, they get around.
That's right.
All right, so Mark, run down your team for me.
So I got a Wasp,
mm-hmm.
and Vision and Scarlet Witch, Hulk, Black Knight, and Deadpool.
Okay. Nice. I like it. I've got Captain Marvel, Hercules, Black Panther, Hawkeye, Ant-Man, and Black Widow. Not Black Widow, Mockingbird.
The other, yeah.
That was one of the alternates you could put with Hawkeye.
That's right. I like both our teams, Joe. It's like
I do too. So who draft, you send?
You're like, you look at the team. You're like, yeah.
Who you send and where?
Well, up in space, I'm going to send Vision and Scarlet Witch to explore that. And then the AIM stuff, I'm going to have Deadpool go first to recon and probably ruin everything. And then Hulk, Black Knight, and Wasp can kind of clean up the mess. And kind of figure out what's going on there.
Deadpool's got a buddy who's like in Hydra, though. He's not in AIM.
Yeah, that's right. He's a Hydra guy. Bob?
Bob.
Isn't it Bob?
Hydra, yeah. Bob.
Hydra Bob.
I like it. Yeah, you got a good solid team there. I'd read the Vision and Scarlet Witch book 100%. If it's just Vision and Scarlet Witch on the moon. You get a little.
Yes.
They could stop in and visit Crystal and the Inhumans.
That's right.
Like,
Check out the Terrigen Mists.
Her brother's just up there. They could have dinner together. Maybe Magneto would show up.
That's right. Maybe and Ultron then, gets involved. They have an old family get together.
Dude, you did. It's a whole family reunion on the moon for Vision and Scarlet Witch. I like it. Yeah. I'd 100% read that book. So my space team is going to... my space team is Captain Marvel, Black Panther, and Hercules. Send them up there.
I think that is a great trio of fun right there.
And then
Hercules is going to want to party and yeah, exactly.
This is a book I kind of want to read too. Ant-Man, Hawkeye, and Mockingbird. I could have subbed out. Did you have alternates? Do you have any undrafted free agents that you'd pull in if somebody's unavailable?
Yeah, I got a Doctor Strange, Spider-Man, and Ghost Rider.
Ooh, nice.
Those are my three backups.
Little Midnight Sun.
I was gonna bring in it. And then, of course, Cable. If I did a Deadpool Cable duo, that'd be kind of fun.
That would be fun, Deadpool Cable. I tried to, when I went through the list, I was like, if this is a character that I associate more with a different team, I tried to steer away from him. So, for me, Doctor Strange is kind of he's one of the defenders. Not really, I associate him more in that way. And on that list, we had, Reed Richards and Sue Storm were on it. I'm like, they're the Fantastic Four. In my mind, I wouldn't put them in an Avengers type mission, but I like it. I went through, I was like, what if I don't get that? Captain Marvel, I knew I wanted a space hero. And if I couldn't get Captain Marvel, I was going to go Nova in space.
Yep.
If I couldn't get Hercules for brute force, I actually thought going Amadeus Cho Hulk.
Ooh, I like that mix
alternate
up.
Hulk. Or She-Hulk. And then I have on my list Ant-Man Hank Pym, alternate Ant-Man Scott Lang.
That'd be funny if we did that.
I said Beast.
I was with you, Joe. That's why I didn't pick Ghost Rider, Spidey, or Strange. I had them on my list, but I'm like, I don't associate them with the Avengers as much as. And that's why I picked Black Knight. I'm like, who's my oddly underrated favorite Avenger? And it's Black Knight.
But yeah, I like some of the more recent Black Knights. I'll have to go back and read some where he was one of the Avengers because I've read mostly his solo stuff, but seems interesting.
So that's... I just like when the link you sent me, Joe, real quick, they had groups of Avengers and Cap's Kooky Quartet.
I don't know how official any of these titles really are. Wasn't Quicksilver in that list?
Yeah, it was Cap, Hawkeye, Quicksilver, and Scarlet Witch. Kooky Quartet.
Why?
I don't know.
I wonder the origin of that name is. Yeah, they had a ton on Wikipedia. It was like here's Marvel Now and here's post whatever and here's Miles Morales was in the Avengers. Like who wasn't in the Avengers at some point? Reed and Sue. Yeah.
Yeah. So the question is if you took Hawkeye, could then I have taken Ronan?
You could have taken Echo. Echo hit my radar.
Could have taken Echo, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like both our teams, though. I think we both get an A draft grade, Joe. That's what I'm going
to
give us.
I think so. Either way, look out, MODOK. Look out, Ultron Drones. You're about to get a butt kicking.
It's clobbering time.
All right. So that was our inaugural fantasy draft. I'd love to do this again next year. I'll pick a different team or different topic. We did sort of an X-Men, a build your favorite X-Men.
Yeah.
You could even do the same thing with a different scenario, a different Avengers scenario. But
you could.
We'll do a Fantastic Four draft.
Limitless options. Yes. In fact, we could do that.
All right, Mark. Well, thanks for joining me. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for having me.
What's that?
Well, thanks for having me. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, I love it. I this is a lot of fun. I hope people have a lot of fun listening to it. If you do, hit us up on social media. It's now called X, I guess. I keep correcting myself on that. At Casual Comics Guy. Check us out at casualcomicsguy.com. If you didn't like it, send me a note too. Whatever. We'll try harder next time. So thanks so much, Mark. And thanks everybody for listening. Like I said, and cheers.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter. At Casual Comics Guy. At our blog, casualcomicsguy.com. Or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.